Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone Smoke Jensen, The Mountain Man number 26, Justice of the Mountain Man. Narrated by Mort Shelby. With performances by James Lewis, Elizabeth Jernigan, Tim Getman, Drew Copus, Tim Carlin, Richard Rowan, Michael John Casey, David Coyne, Thomas Keegan, Joe Brack, Johann Detweiler, Kimberly Gilbert, Nanette Savard, Terrence Aselford, Ken Jackson, Christopher Sheeran, Michael Glenn, Andy Clements, and Eric Messner.
Smoke Jensen buttoned up his buckskin shirt and walked into the kitchen, where his wife, Sally, was bent over putting biscuits in the oven. He stepped up behind her and hugged her.
You shouldn't do that to a man fixing to leave town for a few weeks.
Why do what, Mr. Jensen, sir?
Oh, you know what.
Do you really have to go, Smoke? Our herd is doing fine without those bulls you want to get.
He poured himself a cup of coffee and sat at the kitchen table, eyeing her with one eyebrow raised.
Sweetheart, it was your idea in the first place to cross the Shorthorns with the Santa Gertrudis from Texas. You having second thoughts now?
Yes, it was my idea, but I just hate the idea of you traveling all that way right now, just after that mess with Jim Slaughter was cleared up.
Hey, you'd think the old man's too old for the trip.
No, but you're just now getting over being shot. And knowing you, it might just happen again on your trip.
Now, what makes you say that? After all, I'll have Cal and Pearlie with me to keep me out of trouble.
A lot of good that'll do. When the three of you go off on a trip together, it always seems to lead to gunplay.
But Sally, we really need those bulls. I know the herd is all right as it is. But if we get some of those Santa Gertrudis bulls from Richard King and the King's Ranch down in Texas, it'll almost double the amount of meat on our Shorthorn crosses and make them more resistant to both drought and cold weather.
I know it'll be better, but I hate to see you go that far to get them.
It won't be so bad. Cal and Pearlie and I'll take the train to Fort Worth and buy some horses there to ride the rest of the way. Heck, most of the trip will be fun.
Yes, I know your idea of fun. You and the boys will play poker all the way down there, and you'll win their wages for the next year. And then you'll turn right around and give them back.
You're probably right, but it will be a lesson they need to learn. Don't play cards with money you can't afford to lose.
Sally handed him his plate of scrambled eggs and bacon.
Here, Tinhorn. Start on these while I get your biscuits out of the oven.
Smoke noticed a plate of dough on the counter formed into the shape of a bear sign. Sally's famous donuts.
What's that I see on the counter?
Oh, you don't think you're going to get Pearlie and Cal out of town without an ample supply of bear sign to take along, do you?
Hell, to take enough to last Pearlie until he gets back, we'll have to pack a steamer trunk full.
Just then, Cal and Pearlie walked in. Pearlie, a tall, lanky cowboy with mustache and sun-wrinkled face and sparkling sky-blue eyes, tipped his hat back.
Did I hear something about bear sign?
Uh-uh, Pearlie. You stay away from that dough, at least until it's baked.
That sure smells good, Miss Sally.
You and Cal get yourself some coffee while I scramble up another batch of hen's eggs and bacon.
Almost before the words were out of her mouth, Pearlie, a noted food hound, had his hat off and was straddling a chair at the table.
Thank you, Miss Sally.
The boys quickly devoured their meals like starving wolves. Pearlie stuffed the last of his bacon and eggs into his mouth and washed it down with a giant drink of coffee.
That's about the best food I ever ate, Miss Sally. Any idea when those bear signs gonna be ready?
Oh, you men go out on the porch and have your cigarettes, and I'll let you know.
The three men settled on wooden chairs on the porch and all rolled cigarettes to have with their final cups of coffee.
When you figuring on heading down Texas way, Smoke?
Smoke glanced at the sky, which was the clear, bright blue of a spring morning. The temperature was still in the low 50s, but it promised to be a beautiful day.
I suspect most of the snow will be out of the passes by now, so the train shouldn't have any problems making it to Texas. How about we get packed and try to get off tomorrow on the afternoon train?
Sounds good to me.
That'll do.
You got the boys ready for the spring calving and branding?
Yep. And the foreman over at Johnny North's has said he'll keep a close watch on the place while we're gone. And be sure to help if Miss Sally needs anything.
Good. Then it's settled. We'll take the buckboard into town in the morning so Sally can get some last-minute shopping done. And then we'll take off.
You boys smell anything?
Why, I do believe that first batch of bear sign smells like it's about ready.
Cal jumped to his feet and started toward the kitchen, but Pearly grabbed the back of his belt and jerked him back down.
Don't you know better than try to eat for your betters, boy.
Pearly sprinted to the house.
Take it easy, Cal. There'll be plenty to go around.
Not if Pearly gets there first. That boy can eat his weight in bear sign.
The next morning, Smoke, along with Sally and Cal and Pearly, loaded up the buckboard and headed for Big Rock. Smoke and Sally rode up top, with Cal and Pearly and their luggage in the back of the wagon. As they entered the town, Sheriff Monty Carson was standing in the door to his office, drinking coffee from a tin cup and puffing on his battered corncob pipe. Smoke slowed the buckboard and pulled it to the side of the street in front of Monty's office. After he helped Sally down, she said she would be in Ed and Peg Jackson's general store, picking out the provisions she would need while the men were away on their trip to Texas. She gave a small smile.
Why don't you boys go on over to Longmont's and tell your friends goodbye while I'm shopping?
After she left, Monty gave her an approving look.
You got a good woman there, Smoke. One who knows when to step back and let her man be with his friends.
I know it, Monty. And I'd appreciate it if you and Mary could drop in on her every once in a while I'm out of town.
No problem, Smoke.
You can go on over to Longmont, Smoke.
You must be about starved, Pearly, since you probably ain't had nothing to eat since you left the Sugarloaf this morning.
Well, now that you mention it, Monty, I could use a bite or two.
Damn, Pearly, it ain't been more than 2 hours since you ate last.
The men walked toward Longmont Saloon down the street.
Cap, like I done told you gotta eat every you get the chance. Because you never know when the next opportunity for grub is going to present itself.
Smoke led the way through the bat wings of Lewis Longmont Saloon. And as was his habit from years of having men on his trail, he immediately stepped to the side of the door and waited for his eyes to adjust to the gloom of the room before he walked further in. Lewis Longmont was, as usual, sitting at his private table in a corner of the saloon, drinking coffee laced with chicory and smoking a long black cigar. When he saw Smoke and the others, he grinned and waved them over. When the men all took their seats, a young black waiter strode over to take their orders.
Johnny, I'm sure these men have all had breakfast already, but that lanky one there on the end has never been known to take a seat in this establishment without ordering some nourishment.
You're right, Lewis. We'll all have some of Andre's wonderful coffee. But I'm sure Pearly will want something extra.
Just a light snack. Get me through till the train leaves, Lewis. How about some flapjacks with blueberry syrup? Half a pound of bacon on the side.
I see that you're moving very well, Pearly. I guess that wound you suffered during our excitement last month is healed properly.
Pearly fingered his flank, where a bullet meant for Cal had punched through his side just under the skin when he'd pushed Cal out of the way.
Well, still smarts a mighty if I not move wrong, but I guess the discomfort was worth it to save Cal's hide.
I swear to God, it weren't more than a scratch, Pearly. Hell, Doc Spaulding didn't even put a bandage on it.
I guess that's the thanks I get for saving the boy's life.
The waiter appeared and began unloading coffee for everyone, and a plate piled high with pancakes and bacon. Pearly's face lit up as he grabbed a fork and dug in with apparent gusto.
I see you got your bags packed in the back of the buckboard, Smoke. You boys planning on taking a trip?
Smoke explained to him how they were going to go down to Texas and talk to Richard King, about buying some of his prize Santa Gertrudis bulls to cross with his Shorthorn herd.
Well, spring's a good time to travel to Texas before the sun gets hot enough to melt your pistols.
Richard King. Seems I've heard the name before.
Yeah, you should have, Lewis. King was a steamboat operator who became a serious breeder of cattle. He took the native longhorn cows and bred them into expensive blooded bulls to form a breed called the Santa Gertrudis. He bought 75,000 acres down in Nueces County in Texas, just up from the Rio Bravo. He calls his place the King Ranch, and word is it now covers almost 1 million acres scattered over 4 counties.
Woo! And I thought we had some large spreads here in Colorado.
He ships most of his beef and hides out of Galveston on steamboats and sailing ships. But he's agreed to sell me some of his bulls so his stock won't get too inbred.
As Pearlie finished his meal, the men settled into a comfortable discussion of cattle, ranching, and local gossip. As they talked, Smoke thought how lucky he was to have friends like Monty and Lewis, and how much he was gonna miss them on his upcoming trip. Smoke stood on the train platform, his arms around Sally's neck.
Goodbye, Sally. I'll be back before you know it.
Smoke.
I know. Ride with my guns loose and loaded up 6 and 6.
I'm serious, Smoke. There's liable to still be some of those old wanted posters out on you down in Texas. You know how backward those Texicans are.
Yes, dear. I'll be extra careful. And I'll make sure Cal and Pearlie watch my back at all times.
Sally glanced over his shoulder to stare fixedly at Cal and Pearlie.
I'm counting on you boys to keep the big man out of trouble, you hear?
Pearlie nodded, while Cal looked anxious to get on the train so the adventure could begin.
I mean it, Pearlie. There'll be no more bear sign if anything happens to Smoke.
Don't you worry none, Miss Sally. He'll be safe as if he were in church.
That'll be the day.
As the train pulled through the mountain passes, most still with quite a bit of snow on the ground from the winter snows, Smoke and the boys moved into the smoking car. They sat at a table and Pearlie pulled out a weathered packet of cards.
You ready to lose the sugar loaf, Smoke?
You boys don't have a chance. Lewis loaned me a couple of his poker plant cigars. No way I can be beat as long as I'm smoking these.
Pearlie began to deal the cards. They began to play stud poker, using some chips kept on hand in the smoking car for the passengers to use. As the day wore on, miles passed, and the pile of chips in front of Smoke grew steadily larger, while Cal's and Pearlie's shrank slowly. A few other men in the car began to gather around, drawn by the lure of a poker game and the evident fun Smoke and the boys were having playing. Finally, a man wearing a bowler derby and a boiled white shirt stepped over, a thin, short cigarillo hanging from his mouth.
Mind if I sit in?
The man pulled up a chair without waiting for an answer. Smoke pursed his lips. He'd seen men like this hundreds of times in his years on the trail. Tin horns. They traveled from town to town making a living off suckers who didn't know the difference between a shaved card and the one marked with a sharp edge of a signet ring. Pearlie and Cal looked to Smoke to see what he was gonna do. He gave him a sly wink and grinned at the stranger.
Sure, have a seat. This is just a friendly game, however. Might not be up to your standards.
Oh, I'm not really much of a poker player, so I'll fit right in. My name's Maxwell Gibbons.
I'm Smoke, and this is Cal and Pearlie.
Max pulled a small wad of greenbacks from his coat pocket and put them on the table in front of him.
What's the game?
Stud poker.
Without being obvious, Smoke kept his eye on Max as the game progressed, and the stack of chips in front of the newcomer steadily grew. He could see Cal and Pearlie becoming more and more frustrated as their money seemed to disappear before their very eyes. Soon, Smoke had had enough of Max's trickery, and he picked up the deck of cards and stared at the gambler.
I want to show you something, Tin Horn.
Smoke placed the cards on the table and proceeded to cut 4 aces in a row. Then he picked the cards up, shuffled them, and dealt 4 hands face up, giving himself 4 aces and Pearlie 4 kings and Cal 4 queens. Max's eyes widened, then narrowed as his face flushed bright red.
I don't understand.
Oh, I think you do.
Smoke pointed at the signet ring on Max's hand.
You've been shaving the face cards ever since you sat down, so they'd be easy to pick out of the deck.
Max pushed his chair back, his hand drifting toward his coat.
You called me a car cheat, mister?
I'd be calling you dead if that hand moves another inch.
Max looked into Smoke's eyes, and his face paled at what he saw there.
Just who are you, mister?
The name's Smoke Jensen.
The Smoke Jensen?
There ain't but the one, Tinhorn.
Mr. Jensen, I'm sorry about all this. I'll just take my stick and go about my business.
Max reached for his money. Smoke shook his head.
I don't think so, Max. Just leave it. And don't let me see your face again until we get to Texas. If I do, I'll be forced to kill you.
Oh, but where'll I go? The train isn't all that big.
That's up to you, Max. You could always get off at the next station.
But that's in the middle of nowhere.
Your choice, Tinhorn. Get off and wait for the next train, or take a bullet. Makes no difference to me either way.
Smoke gathered up the pile of money and chips and handed them to Cal and Pearly.
Damn!
Max grabbed his hat and stalked out of the car toward the front of the train. He stopped in the doorway and looked back at the table.
I'll get you for this, Jensen! Just you wait!
Smoke didn't answer, but he let his hand fall to the butt of his pistol, and Max hastily departed from sight.
Smoke? How'd you know he was cheating?
I've played poker in too many saloons and with too many really good card sharks over the years not to recognize the type, Cal.
Then why'd you let him sit in with us?
I figured you boys needed a lesson in the realities of life on the trail. Louis Longmont once told me, Smoke, someday a man's going to come up to you and tell you he can make a jack jump out of a deck of cards and spit in your eye. And you're going to be tempted to bet against him. Don't, he said, because sure as I'm sitting here, you're going to wind up with spit in your eye and an empty bankroll.
That sounds like Louis. He has a way with words.
And it's the truth. Remember, a man's not going to ask you to take a bet he can't win. So the best thing to do is not to bet with strangers.
What you want us to do with this money Max left?
Keep it. You can use it for spending money on the trip.
The train slowed as it pulled into a small town that wasn't much more than a water stop. And Smoke and the boys saw Max step out of the car ahead, carrying his carpet bag in his hand. As the train pulled out, they waved through the window at him. He did not wave back. James Slade, who called himself the Durango Kid, sat in his stirrups and shaded his eyes against the sun as he surveyed the small herd of cattle in the valley below.
Looks like about 100 head.
Curly Bob Gatling, who was bald as a billiard ball, nodded in reply. He was a man of few words, preferring to let the sawed-off 12-gauge shotgun he wore and modified holster on his belt speak for him. Rawhide Jack Cummins, the third member of the gang, which also included Three Fingers Juan Gomez, pulled out a Henry repeating rifle and jacked a shell into the chamber.
Can you see how many men they got riding the herd?
Appears it's only three, maybe four.
And then let's do it!
Down below, Jimmy Little Deer, an Osage Indian living in the Indian Territories, sleeved sweat off his face. He glanced around at the herd he was watching, glad they seemed to be calm. In this heat, he didn't feel up to chasing a bunch of dogies into the brush of the Oklahoma Territory countryside.
Hey, Carlos!
Jimmy looked across the backs of a group of beeves toward his riding companion, Carlos Bearclaw.
How about we take our noon...
Carlos nodded, then waved in the third member of the group, Hank's stalking horse. The three men were little more than teenagers, but they could ride as well as men much older, since they'd been raised in a saddle since they were pups. The three Indian boys walked their mounts to a campfire they had going over on the edge of the herd and stepped out of their saddle.
Damn, but I'll be glad when this day's over. Wait, do you hear hoofbeats? Maybe the foreman's sending somebody to relieve us.
Hank started to reply when his head exploded in a mist of bone fragments and gore.
What the? Rustlers!
Carlos took off, running for his horse to try to get his Winchester from the saddle boot. As he leaned over the horse, a bullet shattered his skull, sending brains and blood spraying in the air in a fine red mist. Jimmy managed to get his pistol out. The two wild shots missed their mark. Curly Bob's shotgun did not. The Durango Kid reined in, smoke still pouring from the barrel of his Colt.
Good work, boys. Now see if these galoots have anything worth taking. Then put their hosses on the dally rope, and we'll get to rounding these beeves up.
How much you think it will get for them in Fort Worth, kid?
They ought to bring in about $10 a head, so figure about $1,000, give or take.
Not bad for a few days' work running them down to hell's half acre.
Don't forget, as soon as we get them out of the territories, we gotta put a running iron over them and change those brands.
2 days later, after crossing the border into Texas, the men stopped and applied a straight branding iron over the brand of the Osage tribe, changing the brand to one unrecognizable. Then they were back on the trail, headed for Fort Worth, Texas, where they hoped to sell the beeves to someone who cared more about the price of cattle than their origin. Since the train carrying Smoke and Cal and Pearlie didn't have sleeping cars, it stopped on the way down to Texas for an overnight stay in Fort Smith, Arkansas, to give the passengers a chance for a bath and some good food. Smoke and the boys got off the train and stretched, trying to get kinks out of their backs that were put there by jolting iron wheels traveling over uneven tracks for several hundred miles.
Damn, Smoke! You think we can get some food here? My stomach's so hungry, I think my throat's being cut.
All right, let's go see if we can find a restaurant somewhere in this cow town.
As the boys and Smoke walked down the street toward the center of town, Pearlie glanced to the side and saw a large wooden structure off in a field by itself, with a chest-high wooden fence around it.
What you think that is, Smoke?
Unless I'm mistaken, that's the town gallows.
Gallows? Hell, it got six ropes hanging from it.
Yeah. It's an idea of hanging Judge Isaac Parker, the federal judge here in Fort Smith. Word is, he was hanging so many men they had to increase the capacity of the gallows so as not to fall too far behind.
You mean they hang them six at a time down here?
Yeah, that's what I hear. So you boys better be on your best behavior. It wouldn't do good to get in trouble in this territory.
Pearlie's expression lightened up when he saw a combination saloon and dining hall down the street.
Now that's what I call hospitality. You can wet your whistle at the same time you can fill your gullet. Look out, Smoke. It don't do to get between Pearlie and food. He's liable to run you plumb over.
They took seats at a table in the dining room close to the big double doors leading to the adjoining saloon. A large woman wearing a white apron with a hand towel thrown over her shoulder stepped to their table.
Howdy, gents. My name's Mabel. What can I get for you today?
Pearlie spread his hands out.
I want a steak this big with fried taters, sliced onions, and a loaf of baked bread. Well, and a jug of beer to go along with it.
Now that's what I like. A man with an appetite. How about you boys?
We'll have the same. But bring us some coffee while we wait, please.
Sure thing, mister.
Mabel waddled off toward the kitchen. She glanced back at Pearlie and gave him a wink as she walked. Smoke glanced through the big door and saw three cowboys rousting a young black man who was trying to mop the floor. The tallest, a man well over 6 feet in height, reached out with his boot and kicked the young man in the seat of his pants, sending him sprawling onto a bucket of water, spilling it on the wooden planks of the floor.
I'll be right back.
Now, Smoke, you know Miss Sally said for you to stay out of trouble.
Nah, this won't be any trouble. This is gonna be fun.
Both Cal and Pearlie shook their heads and got to their feet in order to cover Smoke's back in the fracas they knew was coming. As Smoke walked toward the cowboys, he noticed two men sitting at a nearby table watching the proceedings with interest. One of the men was dressed in high fashion, wearing knee-high black boots, corduroy trousers, and a bright red flannel shirt. He sported two ivory-handled six guns on his hips. The other was dressed less flamboyantly, but was impressive nonetheless. Standing 6 feet tall, he was lean and wiry, and had eyes that Smoke recognized as belonging to a man used to facing death and unbowed by the experience. Smoke walked to the young black man, now on his hands and knees, trying to clean up his mess. Smoke reached down and pulled him to his feet.
What's your name?
Billy Williams, sir.
Don't you worry none about cleaning that up, Billy.
Smoke cut his eyes to the men standing at the bar, watching him with amused expressions.
I'm sure these men will be glad to do it for you, since they caused it.
The smiles left the faces of the men, and they looked at each other angrily. Finally, the tall one stepped forward, hitching his pants up.
Just who the hell do you think you are, mister, mixing up in our fun like this?
I'm just a man who doesn't like to see three grown men pick on a young boy like this. Now, what else do you boys do for fun? Pull the wings off of flies, kick dogs, slap women?
The man looked purely astonished that anyone would speak to him in such a manner. He cast his eyes toward the men sitting at the table nearby, looking to see if they were going to interfere. The one in the knee-high boots just shrugged and took a leisurely drink of his beer.
You apologize for that, or I'll kill you.
Apologize for calling you a low-life pond scum who picks on children? Why? It's evidently the truth.
You son of a bitch!
The man went for his gun. Before his pistol was half out of leather, Smoke had drawn and slapped the barrel of his Colt down across the man's forehead.
God damn! I didn't even see his hand move.
He's quicker than grease lightning.
Smoke holstered his gun and pointed at the man on his hands and knees in front of him.
You gents with this man?
Yes. Yes, sir, but we didn't have nothing to do with what he did.
But you didn't do anything to stop him, did you?
No, sir.
Then I suggest you two fellas clean this mess up before you get the same thing your friend did.
The two looked at each other, then walked over to the young black boy and took the mop out of his hand. As they started to clean the floor, Smoke winked at the boy and walked back to his table in the dining room. Just after the waitress brought him their food, the two men who'd been observing the action in the saloon sauntered into the dining area and stood next to Smoke's table. Smoke looked up from cutting his steak, leaned back in his chair, and gave him a look.
Can I help you, gentlemen?
Smoke noticed for the first time the shorter of the two men was wearing a gold star on his chest. It appeared to be hammered out of two $20 gold pieces and said U.S. Marshal on it. The man was also carrying a shotgun cradled in his arms.
Hello, mister. I'm Marshal Bill Tillman, and this is my associate, Marshal Heck Thomas.
Smoke nodded. He'd heard of both men, who were famous throughout the West as marshals who always got their men. Smoke continued looking at the men, waiting for them to make their play, whatever it was. Tillman glanced at Thomas.
Mind if we ask you what your name is?
I'm Smoke Jensen, and this is Cal and Pearly, friends of mine.
The two marshals glanced at each other again, clearly surprised a man of Smoke's reputation was in town.
Do you have business in Fort Smith, Mr. Jensen?
Smoke noticed Bill's hands were tight on the shotgun, as if he expected Smoke to draw down on him.
No. As a matter of fact, we're on our way down to Texas to buy some bulls for my ranch in Colorado.
We've had some reports of stolen Indian Territory cattle being moved down Texas way for sale. You wouldn't know anything about that, would you, Mr. Jensen?
No. I've made a deal to buy some of Richard King's Santa Gertrudis bulls off the King Ranch. You don't suspect him of selling those stolen beeves, do you?
Nah, of course not. Mr. King is a highly respected rancher in Texas. We may see you later, Jensen. Heck and me are going to be traveling down Texas ourselves. We aim to find those rustlers and bring them back up here for Judge Parker to deal with.
Good for you. Now, do you gentlemen mind? My steak's getting cold.
Go on back to your meal, Mr. Jensen. Nice talking to you.
The two men walked off. After the lawman left, Pearly leaned across the table.
Wonder what put a bee in their bonnet. They didn't have no cause to be rousing you like that, Smoke.
Yeah, sure they did, Pearly. Like it or not, I've still got quite a reputation as a gunfighter. And tracking and fighting gunfighters is what those men do for a living. No, I don't blame them for checking me out. In their place, I'd be doing the same thing.
You think we'll have time for a bath and maybe a couple hours sleep here in town before the train leaves again?
Smoke cut his eyes at Pearlie, who was watching the waitress hand out pieces of pie to a nearby table.
And that all depends on if we get Pearlie out of here before midnight.
Oh, Smoke, it won't take long just to try one piece of pie.
When they got back on the train, Smoke noticed Marshal Heck Thomas and Bill Tillman also boarded, though they sat in a different car from the men from Big Rock.
You think they're following us?
Pearlie shuffled a deck of cards prior to resuming their poker game.
No, they're probably just doing what they said they were going to do. Heading down south to try and locate the men who've been rustling cattle from the Indian territories.
As the train pulled out of the station, Cal glanced out the window at the gallows sitting in an open field, surrounded by its wooden fence.
I'm sure glad we didn't have no cause to meet that hanging Judge Parker.
I've always thought an innocent man has nothing to fear from the law. But with Isaac Parker, I'm not so sure. Word is, his first inclination is to hang a man whether he's proven guilty or not.
But that ain't right.
It may not be right, but it seems to be what the folks out here want from their judge. I guess they feel if the man's not guilty of what he's been charged with, he's probably guilty of something else just as bad.
Hell of a way to run a court, if you ask me.
Evidently, Cal and Pearlie were getting to be better card players under Smoke's tutelage, because it took him the entire 2-day trip to Fort Worth to win all their money from them. As they entered the famous Cow Town, Cal and Pearlie's eyes were glued to the window, staring at the extensive stockyards with their many cattle pen and slaughter yards on the outskirts of town.
I never seen so many beeves in my whole life.
Yep, quite a few steaks on the hoof out there, all right. Guess the folks here in Texas kind of get used to the smell.
You boys think that's something. Wait until you see downtown. On the one hand, it's the most opulent city in Texas. And on the other, it's got more whorehouses and gambling dens than any place this side of Dodge City.
Well, what's that they call the red light district, Smoke?
Hell's Half Acre. Though I've heard it covers a lot more area than that now.
When the train stopped, Smoke and the boys got off and took their gear to the Cattleman's Hotel on North Main Street, supposedly the best hotel in town. Cal's eyes opened wide at the numerous saloons and gambling houses and places of prostitution that lined the street on either side of the famous hotel.
You wouldn't think such a nice hotel be smack dab in the middle of all this.
People out here on the frontier have a more pragmatic way of looking at things, Cal. I guess they figure this is where most of the cattlemen stay when they come to town. And gambling and women and whiskey is what they want most after some months on the trail pushing a bunch of stubborn beeves to the market.
They walked through huge double doors into a lobby that was 2 stories high, with marble floors and polished oak countertops. There were heavy overstuffed chairs situated around the room for customers to lounge in as they read the Fort Worth Star, a local paper, and had their morning coffee.
Jiminy, I ain't never seen such in all my born days.
But Pearlie tried to look bored with it all. It was plain that he too was impressed with the establishment. Smoke walked up to the desk and stood there, waiting for a man in a black coat and starched white shirt to wait on him. The man, a snooty expression on his face, glanced at him and turned around, fooling with some papers on a rear desk and ignoring them completely. When the man turned, he gave him a disdainful glance.
How about it, mister? I jump over this counter, grab you by the neck, and chuck you until you learn some manners.
Why, I never.
Suddenly, Smoke made as if to climb up on the counter.
Yes, sir, may I help you?
Reservation for 3 in the name of Smoke Jensen.
Did you say Smoke Jensen?
Your hearing is evidently as poor as your manners.
Yes, sir. Mr. Jensen, I have a suite on the top floor. 3 bedrooms around a large sitting area.
The attendant pushed a notebook toward Smoke, who took a quill pen from the ink pot and signed his name.
Where are the baths? My partners and I have been on the train for most of the week, and we'd like to get cleaned up.
The baths are right down the hall from your room. There's an attendant there to take care of anything you may need.
Smoke bent to pick up his valise, and then he stopped, staring in the man's eyes.
And just what is your name?
Why, it's Jason, sir. Why would you want to know my name, Mr. Jensen?
I always like to know the name of the man I may have to kill.
The men began walking up the stairs.
Why'd you say that, Smoke?
I never could stand pomposity in a man, or ill manners. Maybe it'll make him think twice before he looks down his nose at a customer just because they're dressed in buckskins.
Down the street, at another fine hotel in Fort Worth, the Durango Kid was registering at the front desk.
And how many men will be staying?
Durango looked over his shoulder, eyeing Curly Bob Gatling, Rawhide Jack Cummings, and Three Fingers Juan Gomez.
There'll be three of us, since I suppose you don't allow Mexicans to stay here.
What do you mean by that, Key?
No offense, Juan, but you'll have to stay down the street over that cantina. This hotel's for whites only.
Gomez stared at the Durango Kid for a long moment.
Bastardo. I no forget this, Kid.
The man walked out the door.
Hey, Three Fingers, it's not my rule.
Curly Bob shook his head.
You should not have done that, Kid.
Hell, you want to stay in a place that takes Mexicans? If you do, head on down to the cantina. I'm sure they'll let you share a room with Gomez.
That ain't it, Kid. You know Three Fingers don't like to be called a Mexican. His mama was half white.
So he says. Anyhow, if he don't like being called a Mexican, maybe he ought to ride with somebody else instead of me.
All this jawing is making me thirsty. How's about we head on over to the dog hole and get some whiskey and check out the women in this here town?
Oh, sounds good to me. Let's dump our gear in our rooms and see what the local nightlife is like.
On the way to a saloon, they stopped by the cantina at the end of Main Street and asked Gomez if he wanted to join them.
You sure you want a Mexican to go with you?
Oh, come on, Juan. You know I didn't mean disrespect. It's just I didn't want any trouble at the hotel.
All right. Let's go get drunk and forget about it.
Now you're talking, partner.
Curly Bob threw his arms around Gomez's shoulders and led him down the street toward the array of saloons and whorehouses on the block. Smoke and Cal and Pearly finished dinner at the Cattleman's Hotel, Pearly topping off his meal of steak and potatoes and canned peaches with a thick slice of apple pie covered with a slab of cheese.
You think you can still walk after all that food?
Sure. This little snack was probably enough to get me through the night, too.
How about you taking us to see the sights? I ain't never been in no big city saloon or gambling halls before.
I don't know, Cal. Sally'd kill me if she thought I was leading you youngins astray.
Heck fire, Smoke. Well, Miss Sally don't know won't hurt her none.
You mean what she doesn't know won't hurt me none.
Please, Smoke. I don't know when I'll ever get another chance like this.
All right, but only on one condition.
Anything.
You boys have got to promise me you won't do any gambling, no matter how much you want to.
Why, that's easy, Smoke. You've done and won all our money on the train.
Smoke took a wad of bills out of his pocket and doled it out to Cal and Pearly.
You know I wasn't going to keep this, didn't you, Pearly?
Well, let's just say I hoped you weren't.
Smoke threw some money down on the table and grabbed his hat.
Well, boys, I guess it's time to further your education, though not in a way Sally would approve of.
The Durango Kid, Curly Bob Gatling, Rawhide Jack Cummings, and Three Fingers Juan Gomez entered the Silver Dollar Saloon, pushing through the bat wings and strutting into the place as if they owned it. They were more than a little drunk, this being the third bar they'd visited so far. The kid walked up to a table occupied by a couple of cowboys, who also were well into their cups, and had two rather buxom ladies of the night sitting with them. Kid stepped in front of the younger of the two and laid his hand on the butt of his pistol.
Excuse me, gentlemen, but I think you're sitting at our table.
What the hell you talking about, mister? We've been here all night.
Gomez stepped around the table to stand behind the cowboy, slipping his Colt Navy out of his holster and holding it where no one could see, the barrel against the boy's backbone.
I don't think you're hearing my partner. You're at our table, gringo, eh?
The other man at the table started to get up until Rawhide Jack put his hand on his shoulder and pushed him back down in his chair.
I wouldn't do that if I were you, partner.
Come on, Jake. I think we've had enough for one night.
As the two men got up to leave, one of the girls frowned.
Hey, fellas, what about us?
Kid bent down and stroked her cheek with his hand, a leer on his face.
Don't you worry none, pretty lady. We'll take good care of you.
Oh, hell, any port in a storm, I always say.
What are you girls drinking?
Whiskey, what else?
Kid pulled out a wad of bills and handed it to her.
Then why don't you mosey on over to the bar and get us a bottle or two? And some glasses, honey.
After the women left, the men took seats around the table, sitting so they could see the rest of the room. Life on the Owl Hoot Trail had taught them to be cautious in new towns. Curly Bob scratched his chin.
How much money do you think we're gonna get for them beeves we got stashed in that corral across town, kid?
Kid looked at the many cowmen in the room, all spending money as if it grew on trees.
I figure we'll get about $11,000, give or take.
Now what's that a piece? I never was too good at doing sums.
That'll be $3,000 for you and Curly Bob and me. And $2,000 for Three Fingers.
Why for I only get $2,000, kid?
Because you didn't help much with Brandon on the way down here, Juanito.
Gomez's face flushed red. He held up his left hand with only three fingers on it.
Well, you don't know I can't use the iron with his hand.
That ain't my problem with three fingers. I only know we did most of the work on the trail down here. So it stands to reason we got most of the money.
Gomez started to stand up out of his chair, his hand falling toward his Navy pistol.
Why, you son of... Oh, hey!
He stopped when Kid's Colt Army appeared from under the table, pointing at his gullet.
Now, don't go getting that Mexican temper yours all fired up, Juan. And if I say you get 2,000, you get 2,000. Comprende, compadre?
Gomez stared at the pistol in Kid's hand for a moment, as if he were gonna draw anyway. But the flat, hard look in Kid's eyes told him he wouldn't hesitate to shoot him dead if he tried. Finally, he sat back down, his hands on the table, his eyes glittering hate.
We will see, Senor Kid. We will see.
Rawhide Jack slapped Gomez on the shoulder.
Come on, Juan. Lighten up and enjoy the night. We don't get to a town like this very often.
Yeah, partner, take it easy. Hell, we may get more than 11,000 for them beeves anyway.
The conversation stopped as the two whores returned to the table, both carrying bottles of whiskey with no labels on them.
You boys ready to party?
Hell yeah!
The kid grabbed one of the girls and pulled her onto his lap. None of the kid's men noticed that two men were sitting across the room at a table by themselves, drinking beer and watching their every move. Smoke and Cal and Pearly ambled down Main Street, trying to make a choice of the many saloons they passed. They came up to the Silver Dollar. Cal was getting impatient to see the inside of a big city saloon.
How about this one, Smoke?
Yeah, one's about as good as another.
Smoke stepped to the side as he entered, his back to the wall as he surveyed the room and let his eyes get accustomed to the smoky light after the darkness of the street. He'd been too many years looking over his shoulder for someone trying to make a name for himself by killing the famous Smoke Jensen not to be overly cautious when entering bar rooms. As his eyes roamed over the patrons, he noticed Heck Thomas and Bill Tillman sitting at a corner table to his left. The two men didn't see him enter, their attention being on someone else at the other end of the room. Pearly noticed the two marshals as well.
Hey, Smoke. There's them two lawmen who braced us in Fort Smith. Wonder what they're doing here.
Yeah, me too, Pearly. Sure doesn't look like they're having much fun, does it?
Cal brushed past Smoke and Pearly.
There's a table over yonder, Smoke.
Smoke watched as the men at a table off to the right got up from their chairs and walked toward the stairs with a couple of women on their arms.
Let's get it.
Smoke was glad the table was across the room from the lawmen. He didn't want to have to put up with any more questions from them tonight. They took their seats at a table next to four men who were entertaining two women and who evidently were feeling no pain, for there were two empty whiskey bottles on the table and they were starting on a third. As they sat down, one of the men at the table next to them glanced over at Smoke and grinned drunkenly. Smoke smiled back and tipped his hat. Pearly got up and walked to the bar, returning after a few minutes with a small bottle of whiskey and a pitcher of beer.
Who's the beer for, Pearly? Well, it's for young pups who aren't old enough to be drinking whiskey, Cal.
Hell, a man old enough to get shot ought to be old enough to drink whiskey if he wants to.
Speaking of that, you ain't been shot in over a month. That ought to be a record for you.
I wouldn't want to talk too much about that, Pearly, as I remember you were the last one in this group to take a bullet.
Pearly rubbed his side, a rueful expression on his face.
Don't remind me. Still hurts when the weather changes.
Cal looked up from making himself a cigarette and saw the distant look in Smoke's eyes and the slight grin on his face.
What are you thinking about so hard, Smoke?
Smoke came out of his reverie and shook his head.
Just thinking on how glad I am to be here with you boys.
Well, if you're so glad to be with us, how about taking a drink or two of whiskey and joining in the fun?
Smoke picked up his glass and held it up.
Don't mind if I do. Here's to us, boys. Let's let her rip.
As the evening wore on, Cal and Pearly became more and more excited by the activities of the saloon, especially the women who were constantly approaching the table and asking if the boys would like to buy him a drink. Finally, Smoke realized his presence was inhibiting Cal and Pearly from having a good time.
Boys, I think I'll just mosey on back to the hotel and give you some space to maybe do some entertaining on your own.
Cal and Pearly glanced at one another. Then Pearly grinned.
All right, boss man. We'll see you bright and early in the morning and see about getting them beefs.
As Pearly said this, the man at the table next to him cocked an ear. He leaned over the back of his chair.
Did I hear you men were interested in buying some livestock?
Smoke glanced at him, immediately realizing that this was no regular cowboy. He was very much doubting that he was a rancher either. He wore clothes that were too fancy and had his pistol tied down low on his leg, more in the manner of a gunny than a cowman. Smoke nodded, however, not wanting to be rude, especially to a man who looked half drunk.
Yes, we're in the market for some bulls. Why do you ask?
Well, I got some prime beef on the hoof down in one of the corrals on the edge of town. Don't rightly know how many bulls there are in the bunch, but I would be happy for you to take a look and see if they are of interest to you.
I assume you've got a bill of sale for the animals.
The man's face darkened, and he got up from his chair.
Why do you ask a damn fool question like that, mister? You implying I'm a rustler?
As he spoke, the man let his hand fall to his pistol butt. Smoke gently unhooked the hammer thong off his colt and stood and faced the man.
I don't know what you are, mister. All I know is you asked me if I wanted to buy some cattle, and I asked you if you had a bill of sale. If that bothers you, it's just too damn bad, because it means you're either a poor businessman or a thief. And in either event, I don't think I'd care to do business with you.
Do you know who you're talking to like that, mister?
No, but I'm sure you're going to tell me. Loudmouths always seem to think they're more important than they are.
I'm the Durango Kid, and I am to kill you for talking to me like that.
You make a move towards that smoke wagon, and you'll be dead before you clear leather.
Just who are you, mister?
I'm Smoke Jensen.
You don't want to mess with Smoke Jensen, kid. I hear tell he's faster than grease lightning.
To hell with him!
The kid glanced over his shoulder at his friends as if to make sure they were back in his play.
I'll kill him where he stands.
You want to tell me your real name? Or do you want Durango Kid on your marker on Boot Hill?
An uncertain look crossed Kid's face. He had never met anyone he couldn't intimidate before. And he suddenly became concerned that just maybe he'd bitten off more than he could chew. Cal and Pearly, still sitting at the table, had their hands on their pistol butts, not to protect Smoke from the kid, because they knew he could handle the gun slick, but to guard against Smoke being shot in the back by one of Kid's friends. Three Fingers Gomez stepped up to whisper in the kid's ear.
Maybe you better take this outside, kid. Fewer witnesses.
Kid thought for a moment, then turned and sat back down at his table.
I'm not through with you yet, Jensen.
Smoke just shook his head. He looked down at Cal and Pearly.
You boys be careful. I'll see you back at the hotel later.
Yes, sir.
Chow's face relaxed now that the threat of imminent violence had passed. When they saw Smoke leaving the table, two girls in revealing dresses ambled on over to the table and sat down across from Chow and Pearlie.
You boys looking for some company?
Well, I do believe we are.
Pearlie signaled the bartender for another couple of glasses. Walking toward the bat wings, Smoke accidentally bumped a poker player's back as he brushed past his chair.
Oh, sorry.
Smoke continued on his way. Max Gibbons, the gambler Smoke had braced and thrown off the train, looked up, his face scowling as he recognized the mountain man. He threw in his hand and gathered up his chips, raking them into his hat.
Excuse me, gentlemen. I'll be back shortly.
He slipped his bowler hat on his head and followed Smoke from the building. Not sure why, but hoping for some chance to avenge himself to occur. As Smoke walked through the bat wings, Kid watched him with eyes that glittered hate.
I'm gonna go outside and take care of that hombre. Watch as many as was with and make sure they don't do nothing to interfere.
The kid stood up and walked toward the bar. When he got there, he glanced back to make sure Cal and Pearlie weren't watching. Then he slipped out the back door, unnoticed in the crowded room. Smoke walked a few feet down the boardwalk and paused to stop and build himself a cigarette, smiling to himself at the way Cal's eyes had lit up when the hostesses of the saloon asked him to buy them a drink.
Well, the kid's got to learn the facts of life sometime. Might as well be now.
He didn't notice Max Gibbons standing in the shadows just outside the doorway to the saloon, staring at him with undisguised hatred. Smoke ducked his head and applied a lucifer to his cigarette.
Hey, Jensen, you ready to settle our differences now?
Smoke whirled, crouching, his hand dropping toward the butt of his Colt as he tried to see into the blackness in front of him. The Durango Kid stepped forward into the scant light from the lanterns on the front wall of the Silver Dollar Saloon. He had his pistol in his hand, held it waist level, a hammer already cocked back.
I'm gonna kill you, Jensen! And then everybody'll know who the fastest gun in the West is.
Smoke's hand twitched. He knew he'd have to draw as fast as he ever had to stand a chance against a man with his gun already drawn and leveled. Smoke started to make his play. The kid's body was thrown forward to land sprawled, face down in the dirt of the alleyway, dead before he hit the ground. Smoke filled his hand with iron and stared into the alley, noticing a dark figure hightailing it out the rear of the passageway and around the corner of the saloon. Suddenly, the street was filled with onlookers as men and prostitutes poured out of the bat wings of the saloon to stand in a group looking down at the body of the kid. Marshals Bill Tillman and Heck Thomas pushed their way through the crowd, guns drawn, and stepped to Smoke's side.
I'll take that pistol, Jensen.
Tillman had his Colt pointed at Smoke's belly. Smoke let the pistol hang by his finger and handed it to the lawman.
Someone shot him from behind. I saw him run up the alley and enter the saloon by the back door.
Thomas squatted and examined the two bullet holes in the kid's back, then used the toe of his boot to flip the Durango Kid over onto his stomach, where a single exit hole of one of the bullets could be seen.
Somebody drilled him in the back twice, that's for sure.
Max Gibbons stepped to the front of the crowd, grabbing Tillman by the shoulder.
Jensen did it, Marshal. I saw him.
Ten Horn's lying, Marshal. And if you give me 5 minutes with him alone, I'll make him admit it.
The only place you're going is the local lockup until I can get you to Fort Smith, Jensen, where Judge Parker will listen to all relevant testimony. And then sends you to hang by the neck till you're deader than that fellow on the ground there.
Smoke took a step toward Gibbons, who rapidly backed away until Tillman grabbed his arm and pulled him behind.
Marshal, check my pistol. It hasn't even been fired.
He reloaded it, Marshal. I saw him do it.
Pearlie elbowed his way through the crowd to stand before Tillman and Thomas.
Marshal, Smoke Jensen didn't shoot nobody in the back. Well, he don't have to, since he can outdraw anybody in the country.
We got a witness, mister.
Tillman inclined his head toward Gibbons, who dropped his gaze when Pearlie and Cal turned to stare at him. He put his hand on Smoke's shoulder and pulled him down the street toward the local jail.
You'll have a chance to say your piece at the trial.
Thomas spoke to Pearlie as he followed Tillman and Smoke down the street. Smoke turned his head to Pearlie and cut his eyes towards Gibbons, indicating Pearlie should have a talk with him. Pearlie nodded, his eyes flat and angry.
I'll get to the bottom of this, Smoke!
With that, Pearlie turned and followed Gibbons, who was trying to disappear into the crowd.